Philippians chapter 1. If you will permit, I'm going to do something a little different tonight, in that I am going to share with you some bits and pieces of our life. I speak of Louise and myself, some bits and pieces of our life. I have been thinking much about these bits and pieces lately for several reasons. One, I'm getting older, and you start reminiscing more when you get older. But I have been thinking about how the Lord has used us. I say that humbly, how the Lord has used us and continues to do so, and how our lives have been interwoven with others connected with the L. Nathan home. I had intended to give a message tonight. In fact, I have my notes right here, but I think I'll just share with you some of these bits and pieces of our life, if you don't mind. To me, it's an interesting story. I trust you would think so. It was just a few days ago, our oldest daughter, Diane, sent to me an email. Maybe you saw this somewhere online out there. But she sent me a little story, a little fable. It was about a young man in India who would carry water every day from the river to his home. And he had a long pole, and on both ends of the pole he had pots, or a pot on either end. And one was a cracked pot. Have you seen this email? The cracked pot? I see a head shaking the affirmative in the back. The crack pot. And the fable said that every day when this young man would go get the water, this crack pot would lose water, of course, and so by the time the man got to his destination, the crack pot was about half filled. And so this went on for some time. And the crack pot felt so badly that he would lose this water. And the story went on, if my memory serves me correctly, the story went on that one day the crackpot said to the young man, now, who ever heard of a crackpot talking? But in fables, they do. And so the crackpot said to the young man that he felt so badly, he apologized for being cracked and for losing this water, and he just felt so badly. But the young man told him, said, well, now, have you noticed in going back to my home, have you noticed all the flowers on your side of the road? I was well aware of your crack, and so some time ago I planted some flower seed along that side of the road, and as I would come and get the water and go back and you would lose the water, it was on your side of the road that you watered these flowers. And said, now look at the beautiful flowers all along the roadway back to the house. Not on the other side, but on your side. And the upshot of the story was that we are all cracked pots. And the Lord uses us in one way or another. Well, I appreciated that story. And I thought even further of something that I'm sharing with you tonight concerning this interesting story. And then this morning, to add to the thinking that I've been having, the Onward paper was given to me, and who is on a drawing of her, at least, on the front page here, is Abigail Townsend Love. How many of you read the story today? You haven't read this yet? One hand. That's Joe, isn't it? Joe, you read the story. And I read the story. Let me raise my hand. Well, read the story. Now, I'm going to give you this in bits and pieces, so bear with me. But look at Philippians chapter 1, verse 6. I think perhaps this was the first verse I memorized after becoming a Christian. If it were not the first verse, it would be Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 and 9. But I think maybe Philippians 1 and 6 was the first verse that I memorized, latter part of 1954, in becoming a Christian. Being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Now you can write down beside that verse, commencement. He which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ, until he comes to take us to be with himself. So he begins a good work, commencement. Look at chapter 2 and verse 13. For it is God which worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. So God continues to work. He begins the work when we're saved. Now he continues to work. It's God who worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. So you can put down continuation. And look at chapter 3. And verse 20, chapter 3 and verse 20. For our conversation, our citizenship, is in heaven, from whence also we look for the Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, who shall change our vile body or body of humiliation, that it may be fashioned like unto his glorious body, according to the working whereby he is able even to subdue all things unto himself, according to the working. So you can put down here consummation. Commencement, he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Commencement, for it is God who worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Continuation. And then he speaks about the time we're going to be with the Lord, and he's going to change our body of humiliation according to his working, consummation. God is at work in our lives, and we all have a story to tell. And you are allowing me to share my story with you. Maybe later I can hear, sometime in the future, I can hear something of your story, how God has worked and is working in your life. You've heard me say that I was saved the latter part of 1954. It was at Grace Chapel. Although Herman Reams was my first foreman when I went to work. I used to engrave printing plates. I was a hand engraver for a number of years. And when I went to work for Strong Bag Company down in Fulton Bottom, Herman Reams was my first foreman. Now, Herman Reams at one time, this was before he was saved, but his family was connected with, it was Sherm Heights Gospel Hall at that time. What year did it move here? 52 or 53. Used to be Sherm Heights Gospel Hall, now Carlisle Avenue Gospel Chapel, but Herman Reams, Herman and his family, and I think Jasper and his family, I don't know who else, had already left here and had started, Al Ridolfi, I guess, Al Ridolfi and his family, had left here and had started a work which became Grace Chapel, or Grace Gospel Chapel. So Herman Reams was my first foreman. And I can remember how instrumental he was in my life, even though he wasn't saved at the time. He used to worry me to no end about coming to this chapel. And my brother-in-law, Dalton Moses, my sister, Dalton and Frances, they moved near the chapel over by McGuire Hospital. They visited the chapel a time or two there and told me something about it. And so here was another connection. Well, Louise and I finally decided we'd go to the chapel. And there was Herman Reams, there was Jasper, and there was Joe Cheatham preaching. There was Richard Vaya preaching, young Richard Vaya. And so at any rate, I was saved the latter part of 54. Louise, a couple of months later, Richard Vaya baptized me in 1955, February of 1955, at Emmanuel Baptist Church. We didn't have a baptistry. So I was saved the latter part of 54, Louise shortly after. And I had met Herman's brother, Horace Reams, at Millhiser Bag Company. They both were owned by the same outfit. And so I met Horace. I was impressed with him as I was impressed with Herman. Well, we were saved. We were in the fellowship there across town. It was in 1960 that, after much prayer, we determined to move to Memphis, Tennessee. I used to work with a man from Richmond, and he and I were working at the time down in the Fulton Bottom. And work was short, and so we were cutting back on our hours. And one of us, well, we both talked, this other engraver and myself, we both talked personally among ourselves that one of us better start looking for a job. And we said, which one is going to be? You go, I'll stay. If I go, you stay, and so on. And I thought about taking a job in Atlanta, Georgia. Virginia Carolina Chemical Corporation was looking for an engraver. And I decided maybe I would check into this. I did. I decided not to go to Atlanta. So Charles Volkman took the job to Atlanta. And then I wound up going to Albemarle Paper Company. And then later, Charles Volkman moved to Atlanta because a big typesetting firm there was opening up an engraving department, and they were scouring the country for some engravers. So word came to me that here is a job opportunity in Memphis, Tennessee. And that's when we were praying about going to Memphis. This was in 60. We finally decided to do so. And I went ahead of my family for about 3 months. And then when the chapel gave us a send-off celebration, Tom, you and Carolyn were there, and a book was given to me, a Bible study book. Your names are in it. And so we went to Memphis. It was there at Memphis, or because we moved to Memphis, I came to know Brother T.B. Gilbert. How many of you remember T.B. Gilbert? Let me see your hand. All right. We came to know Brother T.B. Gilbert, who was living at that time in Shelbyville, Tennessee. Also, in 1960, we became a part of the Mid-South Bible Conference. And we were a part of that conference for 30-some years. As was Brother Gilbert over those years, at least some of them, before he graduated to glory. So we came to know Brother T.B. Gilbert, and it was in 1960 that we met for the first time some dear Christians from Marble Hill, Missouri. You might say, well, where is Marble Hill, Missouri? If you were to look at a map of Missouri, you would see Cape Girardeau, in the southern part of Missouri. St. Louis is about 120-some miles to the north. And then if you were to look westward from Cape Girardeau, you'd see a little dot. Maybe it's a little dot on the map, if it's there at all. Marble Hill, Missouri. There it is. Well, we met some believers from Marble Hill, Missouri. And it was in the 60s that I started going to Marble Hill, Missouri to speak at the chapel. My first visit to Marble Hill, Missouri, I spoke at the L. Nathan home. That was my first visit. I went up on a Thursday, I believe it was, from Memphis, and they had a ladies' meeting. They wanted me to come and speak at that ladies' meeting, and then I was there for like a week of meetings. But my first meeting at Marble Hill, Missouri, was a ladies' meeting at the L. Nathan home. It used to be a college facility, and the meeting in Marble Hill started at the L. Nathan home. They now have a nice assembly building there and a fine group of believers. But now, let me go to different parts of the country at different times. Here are the bits and pieces. I want to take you back to 1921. I wasn't born then, but 1921. Brother T.B. Gilbert was in St. Louis, Missouri, conducting gospel meetings in a storefront building. A man from Missouri, a businessman, was walking down the street. He heard the singing. He stopped and he listened. He went into the meeting and listened to Brother Gilbert preach. He went to him after the service and he said to him something like this. He said, "Preacher, I wish that you would go to Zalma, Missouri." He said, "That's where I'm from. And my people need to hear this kind of preaching." And those of you who remember T.B. Gilbert know that he was a straightforward man. He gave the gospel message. He told about the death, the burial, the resurrection of Jesus Christ and how people need to be saved. So the businessman said, "Preacher, I wish that you would go to where the place I'm from, Zalma, Missouri, because my people need to hear this kind of preaching." 6 months later, Brother Gilbert took the train out of St. Louis and went southwest to Zalma. I've been there a couple of times. It's just a little community out there in Missouri. Zalma. It's an Indian word meaning end of the line. The train coming out of St. Louis would go to Zalma, the end of the line, and then go back. And so Brother Gilbert got off the train in Zalma. He had come for gospel meetings. He did not know anyone there apart from meeting this businessman 6 months earlier. Now, whether or not he continued any communication with that businessman, I do not know. But he took the train and came to Zalma because of what this man had said, not knowing anyone there. He got off the train and he began to investigate around in the community and found that the only two church buildings, the Baptist church building and the Methodist church building, both were closed. No church operating as such in Zalma. Both of these church buildings were closed and I guess in somewhat disarray. Brother Gilbert investigated and found that he could rent, I believe it was the Baptist church building, which he did on his own. And he spruced the place up so he could have some meetings. I was told he slept on a cot in one of the rooms. And in the mornings, he would conduct children's meetings. And after a short period of time, he began having evening meetings for the adults. Just how long he stayed there, if I were told, I don't remember. But here he was in Zalma. Well, the day that he got off the train, Mr. Charlie Bollinger, who was the banker, came home to his wife, Lottie. I remember meeting Lottie when I went to Marble Hill the first time to speak at the ladies' meeting. I met Lottie and met her several times afterwards. Charlie, the banker, came home to his wife, Lottie, And he said, well, a preacher got off the train today. I guess he's come to gather up all the loose change in the community. Lottie said to her husband, well, dear, the carnival was here a couple of weeks ago gathering up all the loose change, and you were not critical of the carnival. Well, a preacher has come to town, and so he wasn't saved. Lottie was. Now, Lottie Bollinger was praying that God would send someone to tell her and others there about the true church. Now, her son, Charles Bollinger, a dear, dear friend of mine, told me that his mother's reasoning was that the Methodist church couldn't be the true church, because her thinking was the church is the building, you see. So many people have that concept. The church is the building. So her reasoning was this: neither one of these could be the true church because they both were closed. And she saw in the Bible where the Lord had said the gates of hell would not prevail against it. So her reasoning was that neither one of these was the true church. So she was praying that God would send someone there to tell her and them about the true church. In comes Brother Gilbert on the train, and he conducts meetings. Well, Lottie couldn't go to the meeting at the time because she was expecting one of her children. And back in those days, women who were expecting didn't get out very much, I'm told. But she did finally meet Brother Gilbert. And when Brother Gilbert left, Lottie said to her husband, the banker, if that preacher comes back here, couldn't we have him stay in our house rather than him staying in that building down there? Yes, yes, he said, I suppose so. Well, I saw the old homestead in Zalma. It has since burned down, but I saw the homestead. I saw the window of the room where Brother Gilbert stayed when coming back later for meetings. But Brother Gilbert came and preached the gospel, and souls were saved. Lottie Bollinger at that time was thinking about opening a hospital. She wanted some facility to help patients after they left the hospital to come to this, I don't know what you would call it, maybe a care unit or something, as they would heal before going home. So she had thought about opening a hospital. That never was realized. And then she decided that, she would have maybe a home for senior citizens. So she was thinking of all of this. Now, let me leave that little bit of the story, and let me take you to Bristol, England. And I was sharing with the Warners this morning something of this. You've heard the story of George Mueller, how he prayed and gave thanks for the food that wasn't there. How many have heard that story? All right. George Mueller. The Germans would say George Mueller, but we say Mueller. George Mueller, great man of faith. On the morning that the children and the staff members assembled for breakfast, there was no food. But George Mueller said, let's give thanks for the food. It will be coming. Words to that effect. It so happened, and we'll put that in quotes, it so happened that morning that a bread truck broke down. And then a milk truck broke down. And they both could not deliver their products. And so they brought them to the home. After they had given thanks, in came the food. When George Mueller prayed and gave thanks, there was a little girl. Did I do something wrong? There was a little girl about 3 years old holding on to his hand when he gave thanks. And I understand she looked up at the ceiling expecting the food to come down from heaven. That little girl holding his hand was Abigail Townsend. She later married a Luff, so she became known as Abigail Townsend Luff. But Abigail Townsend. In Bristol, a family by the name of Townsend had moved to Bristol to help in the assembly and to help in the orphanage, or the orphanages, I guess I should say. Mr. Townsend, Abigail's father, was the superintendent of the Sunday school in the assembly in Bristol. And so they were quite active in the assembly as they were active in the orphanage. And so the morning that George Mueller gave thanks for the food, little Abigail, about three, was holding on to his hand. And I was told that even at a very early age in her life, she prayed that God would use her later in life to have a home for senior Christians, as he was using George Mueller and others in the orphanage for children. As a little girl, she prayed that God would use her later in life to have a home for senior Christians. Well, I'm not sure when she bought a palatial home in Buffalo, New York. It wasn't too many years ago that Hurley Dixon from the L. Nathan home came back to Burlington, where he's from. He said, "Eddie, I want you to go with me to Florence, South Carolina for an interview with John Bramhall. I've known John Bramhall, as some of you have, for years." I said, "Okay, what is this interview going to be about?" He said, "The L. Nathan home." Said, "He's the only one that we know of that still was connected, that's still living, was connected with the L. Nathan home when it was in Buffalo." Which wasn't altogether true, because until fairly recently, Sister Abigail had two nephews at the Pittsburgh Christian Village. I think they're gone now. So we did an interview with John Bramhall as he told about Sister Abigail buying this palatial mansion of a home in Buffalo for a couple of $1,000s. Ridiculously low figure. But God was in it. And so she established and opened the L. Nathan home, a work by faith for senior believers. And I think it was in the 30s that Sister Abigail died. And Lottie Bollinger out in Missouri never met her. So during one of the visits of T.B. Gilbert, Lottie Bollinger was asking Brother Gilbert, "Well, you live by faith. You don't take collections. You don't have a salary. How do you live by faith?" And Brother T.B. Gilbert said to Lottie Bollinger, he said, "I'm going to give you a book, a little book about Sister Abigail." He said, "I think you'll enjoy reading this. And this will help you to understand what it means to live by faith." And so he gave to her this book about Sister Abigail. And so she learned about the L. Nathan home in Buffalo. It was around 52 or 53 that one of Lottie's daughters, Minna Jean Bollinger, went up to the L. Nathan home to work as a staff member in the home, which she did for a couple of years. And then it was about that time that the L. Nathan home had to make a move. The city of Buffalo had upgraded all of their building codes. And so the L. Nathan home was going to have to do some extensive rebuilding in order to meet all of these codes, especially operating a home for seniors like this. So it was going to be so extensive, and it wasn't feasible. And I can remember, after getting saved the latter part of 54, I can remember reading some Christian periodicals dated a few years earlier, 52, 53, somewhere back in there. I remember reading about the L. Nathan, knew nothing about it. But the L. Nathan home had to make a move. They were praying about a move. So here, Lottie Bollinger learns about the L. Nathan home. Minna Jean, one of her daughters, works there. And this was at a time when the home needed to make a move. Lottie Bollinger bought a college facility. I kid you not. It used to be a dental college. Beautiful facility there in Marble Hill. She bought a college. It had been empty for some time. She bought an entire college complex for about $5,000. Now, I guess $5,000 back then would be like, $500,000 today. But $5,000 she bought the college facility. Still thinking in terms of a hospital, you see, which was never realized. But then she decided that why can't this L. Nathan home come here if they need to make a move? Let me go back to the first visit of T.B. Gilbert. This is interesting. One day, Brother Gilbert walked into the bank. Mr. Bollinger saw him coming. He reached into his drawer and pulled out $5, put it on his desk. When Brother Gilbert walked in, and this is the way he would work. He would go into a community and go around and meet the people, and he was letting it be known that he was having these evening meetings for the adults. When he walked into the bank, Mr. Bollinger said, "Well, preacher," said, "I guess this is what you've come for." He pushed the $5 toward Brother Gilbert. "I guess this is what you've come for." Mr. Gilbert looked at Mr. Bollinger and he said, "Mr. Bollinger," he said, "quite possibly all of the heaven that you will ever have on earth is what your money can buy." And he said, "I would not deprive you of one penny of it." And he pushed the $5 back toward Mr. Bollinger. He wouldn't take his money. My, how different are preachers today? My goodness. He said, I will not deprive you of one penny of it. So he wouldn't take his money. And when Brother Gilbert left after that first trip, and Lottie had asked her husband, if he comes back, can he stay in the house, which he did, she wrote to Brother Gilbert. Now, she used to do millinery work. She was a seamstress, and she had sewn a wedding dress for someone and made $5. So in writing to Brother Gilbert, she told how that when he comes back, and she and they will be praying that he'll come back, when he comes back, to stay in the home and not in the building there. And so she just put the $5 in the letter and sent it to him. He read the letter. She said nothing about the money, but he thought it was from Mr. Bollinger. So after reading the letter, he answered Lottie's letter, and he said to her, "Dear sister, tell your husband, as I told him in the bank that day, I cannot accept his money." Well, he hadn't sent it. She had sent it, and that's when she learned about this incident in the bank. And so he sent the $5 back. Well, as a result of his meetings, people were saved, an assembly meeting was established, and that assembly meeting started meeting, first of all, in that college facility. The L. Nathan home moved to Marble Hill, Missouri. This was around the mid-50s. Well, it was in 1960 that I met Brother Gilbert. He didn't tell me this story. Others did, about him going to Zalma, end of the line. And I started going to Marble Hill, Missouri in 1960. So been going over 40 years there. And they're dear, dear friends. Just recently, now let me come forward, give you another little bit here. First part of June, I was in Springfield, Illinois. I was invited a year ago to come to Springfield, and afterward I would go down to Marble Hill, Missouri for a week of meetings, which I did. But we went to Springfield, Illinois, because they were celebrating 50 years for their assembly, 50th anniversary for the assembly there in Springfield. And so Hurley Dixon from Marble Hill, Missouri, originally from Burlington, was invited to come and sing and lead the singing. I was invited to speak. I spoke five times from Friday night to Sunday morning at the celebration a month ago. That Friday night when I went to the Springfield meeting, two older men came to me with their wives, and one stepped forward, and he said, "Eddie Schwartz," he said, "do you, he said, "I'm John Faulkner. Do you remember me?" I said, I remember you. I know exactly who you are." Because back in the early 70s, I was invited to speak at Laterno College in Longview, Texas, for a week of Spiritual Emphasis Week. John Faulkner was the one who invited me. I met him for the first time. The second time I met him was last month. The Faulkner family lived in Champaign, Illinois, and I learned that their parents, particularly their dad, was quite active in helping to establish this meeting in Springfield. And then I learned last month that their father, Mr. Faulkner, was on the board of the L. Nathan Home, and he pretty much made the decision, along with others, but pretty much up to him, made the decision that the home would move from Buffalo to Missouri. I was surprised to learn that. Well, here's another piece of thread in the overall weaving here. And when I left Springfield and went down to Missouri, Marble Hill, for a week of meetings, I spent a great deal of time just going over all of these bits and pieces. Back in 76, I took one of the tours to Israel. I've been there about 13 times or so. Lord willing, we'll plan a trip for next year in May. But this was in 1976. I led a tour group to Israel. Hurley and Virginia Dixon from Burlington went with us. I've known Hurley for years. And then later, it might have been the following year or the year after that, we made another trip. Charles Bollinger, this is the son now of Lottie, was an executive with Braniff Airlines. At one time, he was in charge of all ground operations at both airports in New York and New Jersey, in the New York area. His wife had cancer. And so when that was found out, he took his wife to Texas. I presume that's where she was from. Took her to Texas. And then he wound up bringing her to Marble Hill, Missouri, where she died. When Charles and his wife moved to Marble Hill, he put everything he had into the building of a home, which now belonged to the old Nathan home. He put everything he had into it. So when we made one of these tours to Israel, Charles Bollinger, the son of Lottie and Charlie, went with us. Also, a lady from Burlington, Vera Perry, Virginia Dixon's mother, who was a widow. Charles now a widower. Charles went on the tour. Vera went on the tour. And they met for the first time. They did not know each other. Although I had introduced Hurley to the Marble Hill meeting, and he had gone out with me a couple of times for music. So Charles and Vera met on this tour. And then the next time we went to Marble Hill, Hurley and Virginia said, "Do you mind if we take Vera, Virginia's mother, out to Marble Hill with us?" I said, "No, absolutely not." "Well, we thought it would be nice if Charles and Vera could, you know, get to know each other a little better." You know how that works sometimes. And so they took Vera. We all went out to Marble Hill. I've been going almost every year for these 40-some years. So here, Vera is now in Marble Hill, Missouri, and someone arranged every time we would eat that these two chairs, you know, nobody would sit in these two chairs because they were for Charles and Vera. But Charles didn't seem to be taking the initiative, if you know what I mean. And so we were somewhat disappointed. Well, the next year, we were invited back up to Marble Hill, Missouri. Hurley was invited to bring the music. He and I went alone. And as we were driving out, he said to me, he said, when we get to Marble Hill, he said, I'm going to have a long talk with Charles. I said, a long talk with Charles? About what? He said, about my mother-in-law. I said, what do you mean you're going to have a long talk? Well, he said, I'm going to ask him why he doesn't show more interest in my mother-in-law. I said, Hurley, have you lost your mind? You can't do that. That's none of your business. Well, he said, I'm going to ask him. So now, there's Charles, a perfect gentleman, as Vera is a perfect lady. And Virginia had asked her mother, well, why don't you write to Charles? She said, he wrote to me, and I answered his letter. I'm not going to write until he writes again. So Hurley said, I'm going to ask Charles why he doesn't show more interest in my mother-in-law. I said, Hurley, I think you've lost your mind. We got out to Marble Hill, and this one day, Charles, Hurley, and I were together. We were going to the hardware store to get something. And as we pulled up in front of the hardware store, I was driving. Hurley said, Charles, I want to ask you something. I looked back at Hurley, looked at Charles sitting next to me. I said, gentlemen, I'm going to slip on into the hardware store. You go ahead. Hurley said, no, you can sit right there, Eddie. I want you to hear this. I sat there. Hurley said, believe it or not, Hurley said, Charles, I want to ask you about my mother. Why haven't you shown more interest in my mother-in-law? He said, now, you seem to be so suited for each other, and you seem to be attracted to one another, but why haven't you taken more initiative? Charles turned in the seat. He looked back at Hurley sitting in the back seat. He said, now, you two fellows are scheduled to leave in the morning, aren't you? Yes, we're leaving in the morning, heading back home. Very sternly, he said, I want about an hour of your time before you go. I want about an hour of your time. Okay. So later, when Charles was no longer with us, Hurley said, you know, he said, maybe I shouldn't have said anything. I said, maybe you shouldn't have said anything. You have lost your mind, man. I said, he is going to redo the riot act in the morning. And Hurley, well, he was all on edge about that. Well, the next morning, we stayed with Dr. John Englehart. Dr. John is Charles' nephew. And he was the doctor for many years at the home. He has since sold his clinic and now retired. Dr. John Englehart, John and Jamie Englehart, dear, dear friends. We stayed at their home. So the next morning we were all packed. And Hurley said, well, I'm going to slip on into town and meet with Charles. He said, oh, y'all pray for me. I said, pray for you? You should have prayed yesterday before you said anything. And so off he goes into town, and he's gone for over an hour. When he came back, he was smiling from ear to ear like a mule eating briars. And he said, oh, man, Mr., what's the matter? What's the matter? Oh, he said, this is good news. He said, Schwartz always calls me by my last name. Schwartz, let's get in his car. Let's head home. And so I said, well, come on, man. Tell me what the... Well, he said... Charles said to me, well, Eddie, he said, I've put everything I have into this home, the old Lutheran home. And he said, here Vera is a businesswoman. She had her own business in Burlington. Seemed to be a successful businesswoman. And he said, I can't make any, take any initiative toward her and show real interest in her. He said, what do I have to offer her? Hurley said, well, can you give her love? Well, he said, yeah, I can give her love. Well, that's all she wants, man. Give her love. Okay, he said, I'll call her tonight. So Hurley said, oh, let me call my wife and tell her to talk to her mother that a phone call is going to be coming tonight. And it came. I married Charles and Vera 20 years ago. Vera's a nurse. I married them 20 years ago, and she became the nurse at the Elm Nathan home. Because of introducing Hurley and Virginia to the meeting, they later moved out there and became staff members of the Elm Nathan home. And I thought last month, after leaving Springfield and going to Marble Hill, Missouri for a week of meetings, that here God allows us to see some of the backside of the tapestry. You've heard the illustration, and maybe you've seen one of these bookmarks, where on the back side you have all of the different colored threads, and it looks like a mess. But then you turn it over and you see they've all been woven into a little verse, for all things work together for good to them that love God, to them that are called according to His purpose. And you look on the back side and say, well, boy, that's a mess. Oh, but look on the front side. And sometimes God allows us to see even the backside of the tapestry and say, my, all of these bits and pieces working together. And so here, Charles and Vera stepped down from their positions just a couple of weeks ago, a new superintendent and a new administrator at the Elm Nathan home. Tom and Missy Dowell, the new administrator and a new superintendent. Pray for the Elm Nathan home. But I thought now, here God has allowed us to have some small part in this picture. And here's a cap off of the story. Vera, who's still a nurse there, and was up until a couple of weeks ago the superintendent, was born in Bristol, England. Where Sister Abigail, as a little girl, held on to George Mueller's hand. And all of the workings of these lives being interwoven together. Don't you think that's an interesting story? And the story continues. The story continues. Commencement, for it is God which worketh in you both the will and the do of His good pleasure. Continuation. I mean, He which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Commencement. For it is God which worketh in you both the will and the do of His good pleasure. Continuation. And one day we will be changed into His likeness according to His working, whereby He's able to even subdue all things to Himself. Consummation. So we're all crackpots. But let us realize that God is in control. And He is using us even when we're not even aware of it. He's working. He's at work. And let us let God have His way. Well, I thought I would share with you this ongoing story, which to me is very interesting indeed. Let's pray. Father, we do thank Thee for who Thou art and for Thy great love to us. Thou hast proved Thy love by giving Thy well-beloved